Okay, we're going to talk about A, first of all, vitamin A. Let's get right into the A. So first of all, there's two dietary forms of vitamin A. The first one is retinol, and this is fat soluble. It's found in animal products, especially fish liver oils, liver in general, animal liver, eggs, butter, cheese, milk. The toxicity of this can occur from too much of the vitamin in this active state. And so that was kind of the risk for people who were taking fish oil in large amounts in the liquid form. When you're doing things, when you're eating something like the whole fish, you know, you're going to fill up and not have that risk, the same as fish oil. And people who are taking cod liver oil and too much of it have the risk of this toxicity. Now, if we move away from the animal products and get into the plant products, the vitamin A here is in a form of beta carotene. And beta carotene is water soluble. It's a precursor to vitamin A. It's found in plant foods. So anything that is orange, yellow, red, these foods have vitamin A in them. So obviously apricots, carrots is the main one that we always hear about. Even some of our greens have vitamin A. So spinach has some vitamin A. Sweet potatoes, pumpkin, dandelion greens have it, collard, Swiss chard, oat flakes. Cantaloupe is very high in vitamin A. Other green and yellow vegetables as well. And the nice thing about this one is it's never toxic. You don't have to worry about the toxicity in the plant foods of the vitamin A. Now, you could drink a lot of carrot juice and you will find that your skin actually turns yellow, especially the palm parts of your hands is the first to turn yellow. And that's not a concern even at that point. It still cannot become toxic. Working at an eye clinic, I used to be an ophthalmic technologist, and there we would see patients come whose skin was yellow. And the first thing we had to ask them was, are you taking vitamin A or lots of carrot juice? And of course, if they were in the carrot juice, this is fine, and we would say not a problem. But a number of our patients would take vitamin A pills, hoping to improve their eyesight, because everyone knows vitamin A is good for eyes, right? And at that point, if their skin is turning yellow, they were at a very, you know, serious condition, so we had to be very careful with that. So yes, vitamin A does help the eyes, but you want to get it in a natural form. A healthy human liver converts a beta carotene into one IU of retinol. So this is the other reason. You need to eat a lot more plant-based foods of vitamin A, and then it converts over. The conversion, you know, you just need a little bit more of that. And that is what lowers that risk as well for us. Beta carotene also has antioxidant properties above and beyond its ability to provide vitamin A. In this role, they help the body dispense of chemicals that are called free radicals. Some of you have probably heard of free radicals, right? These are things that go through your body. Some people describe them as little fires that are going off in your body and destroying cells and such. And so the antioxidants are what go around and put those little fires out and protect you from them. And let me see, that can genetically damage normal cells, and then especially we're known for setting the stage of cancer. And so this is the importance of antioxidants. They are capable of stimulating the immune system. Vitamin A, we know, is a good base to the immune system. And so again, with carrots and carrot juice, most common, people will tend to use that if they're fighting something like cancer because of this reason, for the vitamin A to help build that immune system. Vitamin A and other related compounds help body tissues to differentiate, that is, to develop in a normal, orderly fashion. And, I have one more. I was going to touch on something else. I'll get there. Vitamin A is required for normal mucous membranes and for normal vision. So there's a number of reasons for vitamin A in the body, isn't there, other than just eyesight, which we hear so much about. It is essential, either directly or indirectly, for the proper functioning of most organs of the body. So here, a study was done at the Harvard University, and they found that an increased consumption of fruits and vegetables high in beta carotene decreased cardiovascular disease, specifically cardiovascular disease deaths. So interesting to note, taking beta carotene supplements did not give the same results. So, how should we get our beta carotene? From our whole foods, and that's the ideal. You know, there are times that supplements are helpful to us to boost our levels of certain nutrients, but really the most powerful and the most aggressive way to reverse diseases and achieve good health is through eating whole foods, right? And so these supplements did not give the same results, Other antioxidant nutrients in the fruits and vegetables may be adding a protective effect to the blood vessels. And so the foods, the whole foods as grown, you know, we can pull bits and pieces out of our different foods and get benefits from it. And one of the ones I like to kind of use as an example that most people have done for years is wheat. You know, we hear of the wheat bran for more fiber, or the wheat germ for vitamin E and nutrition. But when you eat the entire whole grain, your benefits are much higher than pulling it apart and eating each thing separately. And so that's the case with all plant foods. They actually work together as a whole food. A host of other beta-carotene relatives occurs in plants, and these are called carotenoids and can also be converted into vitamin A. And some of these carotenoids include, well, here you go. These, have you seen some of these? The lutein and the lycopene. Okay, so lycopene gives the red color. So these long words are, you think of them as the color in your fruits and your vegetables. This is the power within your foods. So if you actually have a choice between a red onion or a white onion, you want to always choose the most color for your highest nutrients. And so lycopene has been really the one that's gotten a lot of publicity, especially for males, in the respect of red. We're always told men think red, ladies think green, because those are the nutrients we need more of, whether we're male or female. It's known to be especially beneficial to men for prevention of prostate cancer. So they reduce the risk of lung cancer. They reduce the risk of prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer. They may reduce the risk of other tissue lining cancers. And you know, really, I've come to the point that we have studied, we know which things can cause more specific cancers or what specific cancers are higher risk to certain conditions. We've also researched which nutrients can help specific cancers more than other cancers. But at the point we're at now with cancer being such a high risk and such a serious condition, I now have come to the point that I don't really get into a lot of which cancers it's going to produce. Because really, all cancers are cancer, aren't they? And either way, you don't want it. It doesn't matter which part of your body it's attacking. So, here's some foods that are high in vitamin A, and I've got two charts to show you here, but a couple of things I want to mention. This is something interesting here. By cooking carrots, the indigestible fiber membranes are broken down, leaving more vitamin A available for absorption. So if you actually look at a carrot here, I can go back to that other chart. I just want to show you this vitamin A. Look at the raw carrot. Most people assume a raw carrot has the most vitamin A, don't they? But look at a cooked carrot. It's higher. Isn't that interesting? And that's because of this reason. It's broken down, leaving more vitamin A available for absorption. Yes? Good question. So you don't want to cook it until it's mush, obviously. You do want still that crispiness, a little bit of crispiness to it. So steaming your vegetables is the ideal way to go. But it doesn't mean you have to be 100% raw food diet, because even cooking, steaming your vegetables, you're going to get some good properties. And in many cases, you get different properties. Raw versus steamed, sometimes you just absorb, it's a little bit different. And some people have a hard time breaking the raw foods completely down, and so lightly steaming it does help if you react to some of those foods. Now, let me see here. Did you want me to go back to the other chart? Were some of you still looking at the other chart? Okay, I'll go back to that one. Just want to mention as well, when it comes to carrots, a lot of us will get into carrot juicing. And you know, juicing is good. Vegetable juicing and so forth is good. But if you can use the whole food instead of just the extraction of juice, you're much further ahead. Because now you've got the fiber, but you've got that properties again of using the whole food and not just pulling something out. You know, people who drink a lot of carrot juice every morning can actually push themselves into hypoglycemia because there's a lot of sugar in carrot juice. And so if you're drinking too much carrot juice, this can be an issue. So, you know, now you can have, of course, the Vitamix, some of these different blenders that you can do the whole food, and you've got the whole food as it is. And that regulates those sugars going into the bloodstream. That doesn't give you that big jolt. There's actually something, my mind just went blank here. The Magic Bullet, everyone's heard of that? They have a new one out now called the Nutribullet. And that is wonderful. That actually blends it really quite well. You know, now carrots have a lot of fiber, so it does tend to make it a little bit more sludgy if you're used to just carrot juice itself. But it's wonderful, you know, just don't use as much and get into more variety. Spinach, here you'll see cooked. So again, with spinach, you know, there is still some good vitamin A in cooked spinach. And raw spinach is fine too, but there's an acid that's actually found in spinach that can pull calcium out of your bones, the oxalic acid. And so cooking it actually gets rid of that acid. However, I was told recently that baby spinach does not contain as much of that acid as more the whole grown spinach. So if you're using spinach in your smoothies, try to go with more of the baby spinach because then that acid is not as high in that. But I feel if you're having spinach, you know, in your smoothies, what I tell people, if you're doing greens in your smoothies, do spinach one day and then do kale another day and do Swiss chard another day and beet greens another day. You know, don't get stuck on just one thing all the time and then you won't overdose on one particular, you know, food where it does become an issue. I'll mention here as well, a lot of times, you know, we've been taught to not mix our fruit and vegetables, right? And so when it comes to smoothies and such now, we're seeing a lot of these fruits and vegetables, fruits and vegetables being combined. Well, again, the studies are starting to show that, or have shown, especially when it comes to green leafy vegetables, they're kind of in a category of their own. So they don't react with the fruit. And so you can mix them with fruit or vegetables without causing digestion upset. Now, everybody's different. So if you notice it's upsetting your digestion, then of course it's not going to benefit you, right? So you want something that's going to benefit you. But most people don't have an issue mixing their greens with their fruits. And so you can have those green smoothies for that purpose. And then the other way to look at it is your vegetables that have more sugar content, they represent a little bit more of a fruit. So that's why you can get away sometimes with mixing those together as well. But you know, really, you just need to tune into your own digestion. And if you're having digestion issues, you don't want to add to that. So you just have to be sensitive to how you feel when you are mixing these things together. And really, you know, even when you're doing your smoothies, limiting it to fewer combinations, many cases are a little bit better than doing an entire fruit salad in your shake. So kind of limit it a bit more, and that'll be a little bit easier on your digestion. Sorry, how much? Yeah, 3 or 4 is the max I would go, ideally. Okay, we'll move on to amino acids. And I'm sure many of you have heard of amino acids, this term as well, right? And so these amino acids are what we use to build the proteins in our body. And there's 20 different ones of them. And in adults, 8 of these amino acids are what we call essential amino acids. And if they're essential because your body cannot make them. You actually have to take in the foods that contain these specific amino acids. The names of these amino acids are right here. Here's the long list of them again. And some of the ones that are more popular, you might be able to pick out. Lysine is a popular one. So people who tend to have a lot of cold sores can be lacking lysine in their diet. So increasing lysine can help reverse cold sores. Another one here, and something high in lysine is actually brown lentils, very high in lysine. Another one that is especially stands out to people is tryptophan. And tryptophan plays a big role with depression. With serotonin and tryptophan, they kind of work together. And so we might hear more about those as the week goes on as well. The 12 remaining amino acids, not the essential 8, but the remaining 12, they can be made by your body. So the focus is on those 8. If we compare a protein molecule to a train, the amino acids are like the individual cars of the train. And that's the best way to kind of picture it in your body. So just as a train cannot be built out of all boxcars or all cabooses, so the body needs amino acids in the right proportions to construct the functional protein molecules. And it used to be, well, here, if you can choose virtually any vegetable or whole grain, you would find that they have more than adequate quantities of all 8 essential amino acids. And it used to be that we would say, well, you know what, especially if you're doing a vegetarian diet, this is a high risk to get our amino acids because you're not going to get enough of them. As long as you're eating a healthy diet, it is actually very difficult to not get your essential amino acids. It's found in your fruits, your veggies, your grains. And it used to be that in the same meal, you had to combine certain foods to make that complete protein. So if you're having brown rice, you better have some beans with it. Do you remember hearing that? That is not true anymore. We know that this is not the case. Your body actually stores these different amino acids, and over a 48-hour period, it'll just draw and mix and put them together, kind of like little building blocks. It'll just kind of draw as it needs and put them together. So, you know, you tend to eat, as long as you're eating somewhat of a well-balanced diet, there shouldn't be an issue with combining and making all your amino acids as needed. Fruit contains a lower amount of protein, and some varieties may not contain, you know, a whole lot of adequate at all. It's more from your vegetables, your grains, your, you know, this type of thing. But again, it really depends on each individual as well. And, you know, the construction of the body and how much you're using and how much more you need. So this is why I'm saying to some people, you know, you'll have enough lysine. And to somebody else who's getting cold sores, they just need to step up those foods a little bit to make sure they're getting enough. You know, fruits, a lemon is something I always like to really brag up. Lemon is a powerful food. And lemons actually have protein equivalent to grains. So, yeah, you know, a lot of times we don't think of some of these foods as having as much nutrients as it has. So it is a really wonderful food, and we'll talk more about lemons. When people eat several servings of grains, beans, and vegetables throughout the day and get enough calories, it is virtually impossible to be deficient in protein. The big issue is, and again, we'll talk more about protein later in the week, but the biggest issue is not a situation of not enough protein, it's a situation of too much protein in our diet. And unfortunately, you know, the world kind of pushes at us that we need all this protein, and it's quite the opposite. The popular combined protein theory, as I mentioned, is not needed. So again, you know, a vegetarian diet is adequate to get all the protein that you're needing from your fruits, grains, nuts, vegetables, and so forth. So I mentioned tryptophan as playing a role with serotonin in depression. And it elevates mood and has influence on sleep and pain. It is enhanced with sunlight during the day. And you know, a lot of people who suffer depression also suffer chronic fatigue syndrome, right? The fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. And so this kind of goes hand in hand. You can see here how it plays a role with depression, but it also plays a role with sleep and pain. And so getting enough of these foods is really important in our diet. So the serotonin then is converted to melatonin. And you've heard of melatonin to help you sleep at night. Some people will actually take melatonin as a supplement to help them sleep. But if we can get enough serotonin happening, then we can get enough melatonin happening. And it kind of makes you wonder who came up with all these words, eh? They just sat there and decided to rhyme a few and sound good. But at nighttime, hormone peaking around 2 to 3 a.m. is where it really occurs. And most cases, people who don't sleep well, it's usually around that time they wake up and can't sleep. Can you relate to that? Suddenly you watch the clock and you wake up and it's 2 o'clock again. And you know, a lot of people who suffer that condition, they wake up at 2 o'clock and what are they doing? They're thinking. They're thinking about things that have happened in their day, what's going to happen tomorrow, how stressed they are. And stress plays a role in keeping you from sleeping, but also in this not being produced, these hormones that you need to help you fight through that. And so again, you know, people who can just try to have that environment to help them go back to sleep and get through that, they will wake up feeling better. If they struggle through that, they'll wake up feeling depressed, and their entire day the next day is just a struggle for them. So if you ever wake up that you're just feeling really down, just, you know, put it out of your mind, try to say a little prayer and just say, you know, God, I leave it to you. I don't care right now for at least another 4 hours. I'm just going to go back to sleep and worry about it then. And if you can make yourself go back to sleep those few hours, when you wake up, you feel totally different because the body's still able, even though it's at not the peak, you know, rate of now production, it can still produce somewhat there if you can just get yourself to continue to sleep. But around that 2 to 3 a.m., it's 5 to 10 times that of during the day. So we really do want to do what it takes to get our body to sleep well. The body does not store melatonin. A daily production is needed. So we talked a little bit about antioxidants. I'm not going to go into them too much here, but you'll see as I go through the week different, You know, vitamins and nutrients I'll talk about, I'll say, are antioxidants. And so these are the, they might have changed these, I was going to double check on this, but the last research I had done, surprisingly, these are your top 10 fruits of antioxidants. And so your strawberries, your plums, your oranges, red grapes, kiwi, grapefruit. So some of these might surprise you. And then there's the 10 top vegetables as well. Can anyone guess what the top vegetable one would be? Spinach? No, that's good. Broccoli? Lemon? No. I'll show you. Corn you wouldn't expect on there, would you?
Garlic.
Garlic. So garlic is another superfood. It's a natural antibiotic, isn't it? So wonderful food. So spinach, you said spinach was pretty close. And kale, we know, is a wonderful food as well. So these are our top 10 antioxidant vegetables. So we'll be talking about corn as we go on, because I know some of you have concerns about corn. So we'll be hitting on that on a different day. But let's just, for now, think about all these foods as God grew them, as God intended them to be, and so forth. And in this case, these are superfoods. All right, we'll move on. Hopefully you've got that jotted down. If not, you can ask me after. B vitamins. There is one I was going to ask. For B vitamins, does anyone know which is the friendship vitamin? Someone told me this on Sunday, and I said, I have to share this. Do you know what your friendship vitamin is? B1. Isn't that cute? B1. The best friendship vitamin is B1. I thought that was great. So you've seen all these different B vitamins. This one might be odd to you, so I'm going to talk a little bit about it as well. So first of all, B1, besides the friendship vitamin, is found in a lot of different foods. Your B vitamins, you'll see, kind of cross over in the same types of foods. And you need all these different Bs for different functions of the body. Okay, so here's our B2, different types of foods again, and our B3. B3 is also known as what? Niacin, that's right. And it's well known for lowering cholesterol. Now, if you are going to be doing this in a supplement form, you want to buy one that says non-flushing or anti-flushing, because it'll give you that, well, nice pink look, but a little pinker than you'd like, and really hot. But men can discover what hot flashes feel like, I guess, if they take B3. All right. And pantothenic acid, this is another one we don't hear a lot about. Pantothenic acid, if you go through a lot of stress in your life, you will use up pantothenic acid, and you need more pantothenic acid in your diet. B6, I especially like B6, because especially for females, it plays a big role in balancing hormones. And I think I have another slide coming up on that. I'm just kind of showing you the foods. Maybe I don't. Okay. So B6 in general, it doesn't matter what stage in life. Even men need B6 for balancing hormones. But women notice it even more so. You know, whether it's the premenstrual time or the menopausal time, B6 really aids in that. Women who go through and have a lot of symptoms, especially with cramps and this type of thing, B6 will take it away very quickly. Instead of being on a lot of painkillers and aspirin, B6 will do the same thing. I used to own a health food store across from a high school, and I always had a bottle of B6 under my counter, and the teachers would bring the girls over and I'd give them each B6. And they would just kind of relax there for 20 minutes, they were good to go, and out in the field they would run. It was amazing. But they'd walk in like this, and they could hardly walk, and in 20 minutes they were out in the field running. It's really amazing. When your body lacks something, you know, the symptoms are telling you what it's lacking and what it needs. And it's not crying out for aspirin. You know, it's crying out for a nutrient. If we could figure out what that nutrient is, then you're healing the body. You're not just bandaging it, right? And same with the menopause years. B6 works wonderful for it as well. And again, B6 is required for serotonin production and helps to raise the melatonin levels. And so, again, females, I'm sure males can relate, because there's times that we get a little grumpy and moody and frustrated and depressed. Doesn't that make sense now? Because now, here we are, all those hormones, you know, all these things that we need to, that are happy hormones, we're not producing because of this lack of this of these vitamins. B6 is a precursor to at least 50 enzymes and is needed for the metabolism of all amino acids. Isn't that something? We really underestimate B6, don't we? All right, and then there's B12. Out of all nutrients, it is the smallest in the amount required, the most minute amount. Fortified foods such as meat analogs, soy melts, breakfast cereals, this is where most people get it from if they're on a plant-based diet. So the concern is usually if you're not eating meat or dairy, you might lack vitamin B12. And it really varies according to the person. Again, For me, I never really had an issue at all with vitamin B12. To go and have my blood tested, which is, by the way, your best way to find out how your B12 levels are. Just go and have those tested and see. And for me, my B12 has never really been a concern. But as we age, we tend to lack B12 a little bit easier. For the purpose of, you know, just precaution and so forth, now as nutritionists, we are taught to tell you to take a B12 supplement. And in which case, you know, you don't have to take it every day per se, but even if you took it once every 2 or 3 days, it's kind of a good way of prevention. Now, if you're taking it in a form of swallowing a pill, your absorption is very low on that, maybe 20 to 30%. B12 is hard to absorb in a pill form, swallowing it. So I recommend in a chewable or in a liquid, so a sublingual type thing, and you would put it under your tongue. Anything under your tongue absorbs at a much higher rate. So if you can do that under your tongue every couple of days, that's a good way of preventing being B12 deficient. Yes, actually B12, you can get too much B12 as well. And too much B12 can almost be symptoms similar to not enough B12. Correct. Well, if you're taking it every 2-3 days or so, it's usually not a big deal. But I wouldn't get excited and do a high dosage every day because, yeah, if you're not needing it, then just like anything, right? So the blood test will help you determine what to do. Yes?
Yes, there are pills that you can put under your tongue.
Yes. That's fine then. Sure. Yeah, that helps. Exactly. Yes, because it's absorbing in a different way. It's not going through digestion. Did your doctor tell you that? Or someone else? Oh, okay. Because obviously if your doctor told you to take that, then you need it. But if not, be careful what you read because, you know, there's so many things that tell us what our hair can go back to normal color. And it's true, if we're deficient in anything, it doesn't mean even B12. You could be deficient in zinc, especially is a common one for hair loss and hair discoloration. You know, just being lacking in any nutrient can affect your body in any way. So we have to be careful of that because we kind of get on these bandwagons and get excited over a nutrient, you know, and even a food. I remember people saying, cucumbers, how good cucumbers are for you. And people were just eating the cucumbers by the dozen. And then suddenly it came out, don't eat cucumbers, it causes kidney failure. Well, yeah, if you're eating maybe, you know, how many cucumbers every day, there might be an effect on your kidneys depending on the person and how you are. But, you know, I don't recommend just because something's good for you to eat, you know, tons of it doesn't make it better. So, you know, it's about balance. Everything is about balance, and that's most important. So we know the food sources obviously are animal products, and unless it's fortified, the other plant-based would be like your nutritional yeast flakes, seaweed, and miso. Miso is a fermented soybean product. But if you're into seaweed like dulse or kelp or this type of thing, you know, it has some B12. But in nutritional yeast flakes, of course, we know has B12 as well. And brewer's yeast has B12. Brewer's yeast, just to give you an idea, brewer's yeast, 1 teaspoon will give you 0.7 micrograms of B12. And 2 teaspoons of nutritional yeast flakes gives you one microgram? Okay. 1 teaspoon is 1 microgram of B12. And nutritional yeast flakes, 2 teaspoons is 1 microgram. So double. Brewer's yeast is half, will give you the same amount. Now an egg, just to compare, an egg is 0.7 micrograms of B12. So 2 teaspoons of nutritional yeast flakes or 1 teaspoon of brewer's yeast has more B12 than even an egg. So, you know, you can get it in your diet easy enough. Okay, this doctor, who is also a Swiss teacher, discovered that certain plants contain vitamin B12, and he has found that even soybean, spinach, and barley have B12. But when? When grown organically. So it's due to the soil. Maybe if you don't wash it real well, might be more B12, I don't know. But they have greater concentration of B12 in the tissues than those grown in chemical fertilizer. So again, you know, some of these, and I know Dr. Nedley used to talk about organic spinach containing vitamin B12 as well. I've noticed in his newest print of Proof Positive, he has removed that. So I think it's sort of a controversial thing because it's really hard to determine that the same amount is always found in growing products, right? And it depends on your soil and your fertilizer. As little as only 5 micrograms every other day is probably all the average the person needs, and your body does store it. So like I said, it's the most minute. However, if you lack it, it can have some serious, you know, symptoms. So just like anything, it doesn't matter how much your body requires, you need it for that balance effect. Now let me talk, actually, on bees in general. Let me just say, the bees are what we call happy vitamins. And I remember Pastor Mark Finley saying, before you go through a divorce, bake bread together. Eat some whole grain bread, and those happy vitamins might actually heal your relationship. I don't know, haven't met anyone that bread making has done that for yet. But the whole point of it is, the B vitamins really work in the way of changing our whole attitude about life, as you see, with depression and such. It's also the stress vitamins. So when you're under a lot of stress, you burn a lot of B vitamins and you require more. The other thing is sugars and this type of thing will actually help you burn off your B vitamins to a point that you lack in your B vitamins. And it becomes this vicious cycle. The more you lack your B vitamins, the more you crave sugar. And the more sugar you eat, the more it destroys your B vitamins. So it's this continuous thing. And chocolate does the same thing. So again, picking on females, which hopefully it's okay because I'm one. With chocolate and sugar, especially that time of the month, we tend to crave these sugars and chocolates. And that's because we're low in our B vitamins. And you saw how B6 plays such a huge role in hormone balancing and all these issues, that if we're lacking that, especially that time of the month, that's when we're going to crave these sugars and such more. So all you need to do is really up your B vitamins and you'll sail through that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about B17, the odd vitamin that a lot of you probably have not heard of. Some of you might have heard of this term, Laetrile. And Laetrile, it's well known for, where have you heard that term? Cancer treatments, that's right. Now surprisingly, B17, also known as Laetrile, is found in over 1,200 plants. So found in over 1,200 plants, not in animal products, not in meat, not in dairy, only plants. And this is a reason why we say a vegetarian diet helps in reversing or preventing cancer, because now you've got something like Laetrile as well to boost in it. It is a natural chemotherapeutic agent. The millet grain is your highest source in B17. So millet is top of the list. And you've heard of the Hunza people, I'm sure. The Hunzas, and they make this famous bread known as the Hunza bread. And it's been well known for many, many years. The Hunzas are well known to have a long lifespan, right? They're considered the healthiest people in the world. And so they have contributed it to B17, Laetrile, as the reason for this. So the highest source that is found at this point is actually in apricot kernels. It is also found in your peach, plums, apples, and this sort of thing. So in the seed of your fruits. Interesting enough, I tend to think of that verse, Genesis 1:29, that's well known and quoted all the time. I give to you every seed-bearing plant. The power is in the seed of any food. Yes? Cyanide. Yes. So I will talk about that. I'll get to it, I think. No, I don't. Okay, let's talk about that. Oh yeah, I do. Okay, right here, sorry. So basically, how does Laetrile work, first of all? It has an enzyme that'll go through and it's looking for a mate to hook on to. And so it is found in very large quantities only in cancer cells. So it goes through the bloodstream and such, and where there is no cancer, this enzyme is not found. So it'll go through, and when it finds the cancer, it'll hook onto it. If there is no cancer cell with this enzyme to receive it, it won't hook onto anything. When B17 and this enzyme, the beta glucosidase, comes into contact with each other, a chemical reaction occurs, and the hydrogen cyanide, so this is a different form of cyanide than what we tend to think of. And basically the cyanide is the biggest thing people concerned with, but benzaldehyde combines synergistically to produce a poison which destroys and kills the cancer cells. So that is actually the bonus. However, it's called selective toxicity, and the reason is it'll only destroy those cancer cells, not healthy cells. Now, if you end up, though, getting all excited and thinking you're going to eat tons of these apricot kernels in one sitting, this cyanide, your body, if it's not hooking onto cancer cells and such, your body will accumulate it. And it will make you feel dizzy, it'll make you feel nauseous, it can make you quite sick. So your body needs to throw it off. If you're eating it in small amounts, your body can throw it off. But if you start to eat too much of it in this concentrated form, then you can get sick from it. So you do have to be careful. What we have found, the same way as I just mentioned about the wheat kernel or any food that you pull apart, it doesn't benefit as much. So the best benefit way to have this is as a whole food. So when you eat an apricot, crack open that pit, eat that little seed with your apricot, and it has the highest benefit. The apricot itself will actually help distribute that throughout your body. So eating it in that whole form. Now, do people do this for cancer? Yes, they do, but they have to do it under supervision, and they have to do it at a very slow, gradual way until their body gets used to it as well. So they don't jump into it and eat tons in one sitting. But for you to eat a couple a day, Health Canada says you can eat up to 5 a day and you're safe. But once you go beyond that, yes. This is so hard. The apricot pit is one of your hardest things to crack open. I remember my kids going down to our cement floor in our basement with a hammer and banging it. So it is not easy. So you can purchase apricot kernels in the health food stores as well, especially Planet Organic. And if you choose to do that as kind of to eat on the side, you know, that's, again, Health Canada says just for prevention up to 5 a day, eat it with dried apricots then, because then you'll get that combined benefit of it. So some of the easier seeds would be if you're eating an apple. So if you're using something like a Vitamix, you can take, you know, the fuzzy part out of your apple and throw in your whole core and it'll blend the whole thing up. So you're getting your seeds with your apple are easier to even chew and eat if you don't mind, you know, that kind of idea. You know, even your plum pits have it, your nectarines, your peaches, and it's the little thing that looks like an almond. And it has a very bitter flavor. If you've ever tried it, it's bitter. Laetrile is bitter. And so that bitterness is actually the healthy part of it. And unfortunately, they're changing a lot of our foods to be sweet, to remove that bitter flavor. And so we're removing the laetrile out of our foods. So when I said laetrile is in 1,200 foods, that's not just those pits, obviously. It's in your other foods too, your grains and so forth, with millet being the highest. So you don't have to rely on apricot kernels to do that. I'm just saying it's one of your highest sources. Any other questions on that? That's right, yes. And that's why I teach it now, because I want you to know eating an apple and some seeds is not going to kill you. But, you know, if you're going to sit and eat a cup of just apple seeds, it may kill you, you know? So it's anything, again, everything within proportion, within balance. Okay. Vitamin C. Let's talk about vitamin C. Also known as ascorbic acid, which is, you know, the most popular term that you hear. It's a powerful, here we go, antioxidant, right? We also know that just bruising in general, if you tend to bruise real easy and it takes a long time to heal, or it can be a lack of vitamin C. So C helps with bruising. Food sources. I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of foods that have vitamin C, especially your citrus fruits and such, but a lot of other foods that you don't really think would have vitamin C does, like a cabbage, for example, or potatoes. These have vitamin C as well. And so you can see how, as I'm going through this, the variety of foods that have these different nutrients, how important it is to have variety in the diet, not just to get onto one kick of one fruit or one vegetable. No. And in vitamin C dies off quickly with heat. So that's one of the quickest things to kill vitamin C is heat. So if you can eat it in more of the fresh form, you will be more advantageous over the vitamin C. And even when you're purchasing green veggies and this type of thing from a grocery store, when you come home, those should be the first things to put into your cooler, because just sitting in the warmth will kill that vitamin C. So it decreases the risk of cataracts. And you know what cataracts are? That's the lens of your eye where it slowly turns cloudy, and eventually with cataract surgery, they remove the entire lens out of your eye and put in a plastic lens. And we know there's a number of good nutrients actually that helps with that. Grapes are an excellent source of vitamin C. It'll help to raise your good cholesterol. And we'll be talking about cholesterol coming up pretty soon here. But it'll help raise your good cholesterol. Your HDL is your good cholesterol. And it'll improve rheumatoid arthritis. But it can cause kidney stone formation and vitamin dependence if you take it regularly in large doses. Not necessarily, no. Not that I'm aware of. Vitamin C does not seem to play a role on that. From what I, maybe it depends. The question was, do tumors love vitamin C? It really depends on the tumor, though, too. But yes. Yes?
Well, people reach that conclusion because they think if you have a high acidic content, that leads tumors in a...
Okay, that's where it's coming from. Very good. Yes. Yeah, we think of vitamin C to make our body go acidic. And acidic, you never want your body to be acidic, do you? When the body is acidic, that allows disease to set in. So you want your body to be alkaline. Actually, there is a pH balance of what your body needs to be, which is about, does anyone know? Seven-ish? So about seven. Seven is where you want it to be. And when you're, well, your blood is seven, pH balance of seven. So you don't want to be acidic. There is one time in your life, some of you might have heard me say this before at a workshop, when is that one time that you're allowed to be acidic? Anyone know? Oh. When you're dead. When you die, what happens? Your body decomposes and turns back to dirt, right? That's what acidity does. That's what it'll do. It'll decompose. So unless you want to be decomposing as you're still walking and talking, you want to be alkaline, right? So we tend to think of citrus foods being acidic. Vitamin C, we relate to citrus foods usually. And things like lemons, and you know, especially lemons, when we think of the citric effect, the citrus, it is not acidic. As soon as it hits your saliva, it becomes alkaline. And actually, lemons will alkalize your body. Yes?
Yeah,
that's a good point. Actually, I'll be talking about that a bit more. But yes, the question was about the fruits. You know, are those good, the ones that we're removing all the seeds of? And some of them are just hybrids, plant type things. But, you know, we know the nutrients of a seed in general. But yeah, it really depends on the plant as well. If it's genetically modified at that point, or if it's hybrid, or that sort of thing. Yeah. So too much vitamin C can actually cause kidney stone formations. So we don't want to overdose, as I said, on any nutrient. But if we're taking thousands of vitamin C, supplement form is usually the case. We, you know, when it comes to plant, eating the whole foods, your risk is not the same. I'm talking supplementation here, where it's so easy to throw back 2, 3, 4 pills without thinking anything of it. And in that form, it's too much, and your body will actually become reliant on it, so it doesn't benefit it. Iron absorption increases in a citrus base. So, you know, some of your vitamins and minerals need to be combined for the best benefit. And vitamin C benefits iron. And so if you are taking any form of iron, whether it be in a plant food or as a supplement, you want to try to take it with some form of citrus.
Yeah, Johnny, people say that if you get a whole kind of iron, it's taking vitamin C.
I was just going to touch it. You're one step ahead of me. No, that's okay. Keep me on track. This is the last one here. If you take too much vitamin C, you can find that you have loose bowels. But there are times to really dose up on that vitamin C, and that's if you have a cold. So the point is, if you're taking too much, like you're taking a lot of vitamin C every day, when it comes to that point that you want to dose up for a cold, your body is now sort of reliant on it, and it's not going to have the same effect. But if you get a cold, and you know, the average person doesn't take tons of vitamin C, but if you have a cold, you can just really dose up every hour on lots of vitamin C until you hit a point that you have very loose bowels or diarrhea even, and then you can stop and then just back off. And that is what they'll call the vitamin C flush, and it'll actually help flush it out of your body and build your immune system. So that works as well, yes. So take a look at what foods have vitamin C, because again, we always tend to say oranges, lemons, but we don't think of other foods that have a lot of vitamin C in them. And even a banana has vitamin C, right? Our berries, you know, berries are very powerful in so many things, and vitamin C is in most of those as well. Let me show you some other foods here. So we have broccoli, green peppers, nice and high in vitamin C, but there's something even higher. Oranges, we know, of course, we do a lot of orange juice when we're sick, but look at a red pepper. A red bell pepper is a superfood if you get a cold or you get sick. Being red, what other nutrient does it have in it, real high?
Vitamin A.
That's right, A, right? Because of the red, orange, yellow. So red pepper, high in vitamin A, which helps build the immune system, right? And now you're super high in vitamin C as well. So when you get sick, eat red peppers. When I first married my husband, I thought he was kind of a little bit strange in this area, until I eventually researched it and thought, wow, he was pretty smart. He doesn't get sick very often at all, but when he would say to me, can you go to the store and bring me home a bag of red peppers? And I thought, what for? And all he would do all day is eat red peppers and drink water, and the next day he was normal. It was amazing, and that's his cure, and it works for his one cold a year if he's lucky. Like I say, he doesn't get sick very often at all. So on average, you only need about 250 milligrams of vitamin C every day. And so that is why when we're talking supplementation, we tend to go thousands a day. You can see being in a supplement form, that's too high. You can definitely go well over this 250 if you're doing it in a plant food state, and that is more than fine. But we want to aim for a good 250 from plant-based foods. And so again, you can see how quickly that can add up to that 250. All right, caffeine. It says, I got to cut back on caffeine. So what are some sources that include caffeine? We tend to think of coffee. Most of us try to not think of chocolate. And then green tea. Many of us don't realize green tea is very high in caffeine. So if you're purchasing green tea because of the high antioxidants and such again, you want one that is decaffeinated, does not have the caffeine, but you need to read and see how it's decaffeinated, because you want it naturally decaffeinated, because in many cases they will use a chemical that is more poisonous than even the caffeine sometimes. So you want a naturally decaffeinated green tea.
Does it tell you on the dose?
Yes, it will say. It will say. But I've had clients that have seen me for severe stomach pain who go to the hospital at least once, twice a month, carried in for it into emergency. And we're trying to figure out what caused it, and I narrowed it down each case of these people numerous times that it was green tea. So now I quickly nail it because I've seen it too many times. So green tea can cause a lot of stomach pain and upset. So be aware of that. And then we know cola drinks, of course, are high in caffeine, and even energy drinks, right? And these energy drinks are getting more potent all the time in this caffeine. Do you know caffeine they consider to be a natural product? So it is not a drug. And you know, one of the scary things I've recently seen is to walk into a place like Superstore in the pharmaceutical area there, where they'll have Halls and different cough drops. Right there is a package of caffeine tablets. And you can take caffeine tablets. And you don't need any prescription or anything. So any children, any teens can go in and get their caffeine tablets to help them through their school day to stay awake and alert and all the above. Oh, you're hitting on chocolate already. Okay, I'll get to the chocolate. We have to ease people into that one. All right. Well, Actually, maybe I have it in a different section. Let me talk a little bit more on a couple of these things. First of all, I have coffee under my section coming up of water, because caffeine in general will dehydrate the body. But coffee, interesting enough, will pull even the water reserves from the body. And this can vary from 2 to 10 cups of water for every cup of coffee you drink, depending on the type of coffee you are drinking. So if you think about it, a lot of times we tend to think coffee is our liquid and we're drinking that, and in reality its dehydrating effects are even worse on the body. When you wake up in the morning, you eat what meal? Breakfast, right? And if you take that word and you cut it in half, it stands for breaking the fast. And hopefully we have fasted for about 12 hours ideally. When you are going through the night, you will dehydrate, right? And your red blood cells become sticky and begin to stick together. Eating breakfast will lower your risk of a heart attack by 50%. Because even though it's food, it's still helping to reverse those sticky, dehydrated red blood cells. Most heart attacks occur in the morning for this reason. So breakfast, if you haven't done breakfast, you need to do breakfast. It'll lower your risk by 50%. Better yet, begin with a glass of water, right? First thing in the morning. My point of saying this is, what is the common thing people consume in the morning?
Coffee.
Coffee. So if you're already dehydrated and your risk is 50% of a heart attack, and now you're drinking coffee which dehydrates you more, do you see your risk of a heart attack? Goes way up. So coffee is not the liquid you want to drink, but first thing in the morning when we tend to drink it the most is actually our highest risk to ever consume it. Chocolate, as I mentioned, contains caffeine, and some chocolate is higher in caffeine than coffee. And it's unfortunate because, again, being raised in the church, I was, you know, always told, oh, don't drink coffee, but I had a cup of hot chocolate every night before bed. And it can be very high, especially the Cadbury milk chocolate is quite high in caffeine. And besides the caffeine, it also has theobromine and methyl xanthanes, which are three different poisons that contribute high to especially breast and prostate cancer. Yes?
What about the 85-90% dark chocolate?
It still contains caffeine. Now, dark chocolate we tend to promote as a healthier choice because of the antioxidants and such found in it. But that is like green tea. Green tea is high in antioxidants, but if it's got all the caffeine, it's going to injure your body in another way. So that's the same with the chocolate issue. So you need to figure out if it still has caffeine, maybe you can get your good antioxidants and good things from other foods that don't have that higher risk or these other toxins in it. All right, let's move on to calcium. Although milk has a high calcium content, milk is promoted for calcium, isn't it? Drink your milk, eat your cheese, eat your ice cream for the calcium. 60 to 80% of it is not absorbed through the human intestine. And we know dairy particularly can be a high allergen type food. We know it's mucus causing in the body, which we now know increases our risk for cancer. I'll be talking on cancer next, so just to mention that the research I've done in the field of cancer, I've learned that cancer is very much fungal-based and yeast-based, and mucus just adds to that. Humans absorb as much or more of the calcium in plant products than they do from milk. So again, when people tend to stop drinking milk, they'll say, but where are you going to get your calcium? Well, here you are. The calcium found in these plant products are higher absorbed. And in reality, osteoporosis, which is the common disease for not enough calcium, can be even reversed on a plant-based diet. You can see bone density increase on a person who does not consume dairy products. There is an exception of a couple plant foods that contain high concentration of compounds that block calcium absorption. And these include spinach, as I mentioned about the oxalic acid. So if you're eating it in a raw form, try to go more for that baby spinach. And as I say, don't eat it every day. Have a variety in your diet, right? And secondly, wheat bran cereal has phytic acid as well. And so we want to be careful with the wheat bran in the way, especially when we pull bran out of the wheat and add it to our foods for extra fiber. It's not the ideal fiber to actually use. Wheat bran can be very harsh on the intestinal tract. They sort of describe it as sandpaper on an open wound. And so you can cause irritation and problems with that. So I'm not saying don't eat wheat. I am just saying variety in your diet is important. Don't get stuck on wheat, because I believe that's part of the reason we have so many sensitivities to it, is because wheat is in everything and we use wheat in everything, right? So variety is important there. There's lots of foods that are especially high in calcium, and quinoa, some people pronounce it quinoa, but it's pronounced quinoa, although someone the other day told me quinoa is German for quinoa. So I guess theoretically it's correct either way now. But I love quinoa because it is a super high food in calcium, very high in calcium. The other thing is it's non-allergenic in the way it has no gluten. So it's ideal for everybody. It's very easy to digest. So one of the first foods we always recommended for babies would be rice. But I recommend now quinoa instead, because quinoa also has a complete protein. So you don't have to worry about that 48-hour matching those amino acids up. So particularly small children who might not be eating a really well-balanced diet yet, or seniors who have a harder time getting in that well-balanced diet because their stomachs are smaller, quinoa is ideal because you've got that complete protein and you've got that super high amount of calcium, but it's in a form your body recognizes and absorbs at a very high level or rate. So quinoa, if you've never seen it, is this grain. It's growing here on this plant. It actually has a bitter coating on it, and that's its way to naturally protect itself. They said if it doesn't have a bitter coating, we would never see it because birds would love it and that would be the end of it. But it has this bitter coating, and so it's ideal to rinse it in a fine mesh colander before you cook it. And so, unfortunately, many people didn't know that when quinoa was beginning to become popular, and people would just cook it without washing off that bitter coating, and they tasted it and said, yuck, and have never tasted it again. So if you're one of those people, I encourage you to try it again. Now, because of that, the companies caught on, and they actually pre-wash most of the quinoa now that you buy, whether it's at Costco or wherever, in packages. It's all been pre-washed and dried, so that bitter coating has been removed. But if you've tried it and you didn't like it, try it. I call this my minute rice. You know, growing up, my parents provided for me a very well-balanced, adequate diet. However, our diet in our family has substantially changed since. And but one of my favorite foods was minute rice, sorry to say. And that was one thing I had a hard time giving up, the thought of giving up minute rice, because it was tastes good and it was so quick and simple to make. Now I have to say I can't stand the taste of it. But quinoa has become my minute rice in the way that it takes 15 minutes to cook, which is not a minute, but it's faster than brown rice, right? And brown rice takes an hour. So in 15 minutes, I've got this whole grain quinoa cooked, and you can eat it in place of rice. It's less heavy, less starchy, and so I would serve this as I would rice and even use it with stir fry on top or a bean, you know, topping or something of that sort. The other thing you can do with it is when it's cooked up, you can use it like a hot cereal. So you can have it with a bit of soy milk on it if you like, or some fruit juice. To that, with some soy milk, you could add some raisins and maybe some cinnamon or something and make it almost like a rice pudding type breakfast. Of course, you can do other things with it. You can mix it up and, you know, make it in place of couscous, very popular. A lot of you have heard of couscous. Couscous is not a grain, which people get confused with. Couscous is actually based from flour. It's a pasta. So you have white couscous, which is like white pasta. Or you've got whole wheat couscous, which is like whole wheat pasta. And so it's very similar. Couscous and quinoa are similar, but quinoa being your whole grain. So any of your recipes you have couscous in, you can easily replace it with quinoa. So stuffed peppers, stuffed squash, and for me, one of my favorites is a quinoa salad, and I believe a number of you have probably tried that quinoa salad. I used to have a lot of fun with that with the CHIP program, which most of you have heard with Dr. Hans Diehl. We would teach this quinoa salad, and we would have our graduation banquet, and we'd invite all our alumni CHIP to come and bring a favorite dish as well as our CHIP participants. So as our alumni grew, so did our banquet suppers grow, and the one time in our church, we have a long, you know, gymnasium in Calgary when I lived there, and we'd have these tables lined up like this all the way down. And I walk along to see what everyone brought, and half of it was quinoa salads. So we knew what their favorite was, so we had to teach that each class for sure. But the really nice thing about it is you can make it your own. Just changing vegetables and changing the colors changes the dish completely. This is not a boring diet by any means. And so here are all these quinoa salads, which is so beautiful. Each person put their own touch to it, you know, and it was very attractive. So, and even we had a school at Paces. Some of you have heard of Paces homeschooling program. We had a picnic last night, and there was even two quinoa salads there. I was so impressed. And get this, I'll tell you this. In Saskatchewan, they had the same picnic, and they had 10 or 12 bags of potato chips. And here, we didn't even have one bag. Aren't we a healthy count? I'm so impressed. And there was quinoa salads. Okay, we'll be talking a little bit more about these things might kind of cross as we go through as well. But let me talk on cancer a little bit here. I know we're getting close to 12, but we'll see how far we can get with that. The colors here are a little bit dark. I hope you can see this on the screen. But this kind of puts into perspective the diseases and what we're dying from here in Canada or the U.S. Very, very similar, actually. But this is Canada statistics now, and the most accurate, up-to-date come from the year 2008-2009 at this point. And so cancer is 30% of all deaths. That's pretty high, isn't it? Used to be 1 in 3 people would be diagnosed with cancer. Today, we are 1 in 2 people. And so that's a 50-50 chance. And so in reality, we need to definitely be thinking about this. So if we have a 50-50 chance, should we wait until it happens? No, prevention is the key here. And the interesting thing is, the same way to beat cancer is the same way to prevent it. So when people say to me, you know what, I'm going through testing and I might have cancer. What do you suggest? If I have cancer, what should I do? And I'll say, well, what are you going to do once you have cancer? If you're told you have cancer, what is your approach? And if they tell me, well, I definitely want to go natural and I want to, well, either way, whether you choose to do chemo or not, diet plays a role. It's not a big issue that I'm going to go medical or I'm going to go this way. You know, diet, the body still needs food and it needs good food. So it's going to support you whichever direction you go. It still makes a big impact. And it's a personal choice. I'm not going to tell you which way you need to go because I've seen positive from both directions and you have to make that decision for you personally. But I will tell you, diet and lifestyle plays a huge role, whatever choice you make. So when they tell me this, I tell them, treat it like you've been already diagnosed with cancer. Just begin now. And in reality, I'm telling you the same thing today. Treat yourselves as if you've been diagnosed with cancer, starting today, because that's the only way to prevent it. While I'm on this slide, let me just also go through the heart and blood vessel disease. So heart disease, we know, is the number two killer. It used to be number one, but cancer now and heart disease, they're both right up there. And then you can go through the list and see these other situations, but you'll notice diabetes, and I'll be talking about diabetes tomorrow. What if I told you diabetes was an epidemic? Would you be able to tell that from this list? Not really, because it says 3.1% die from diabetes. In reality, diabetics usually die from heart disease, so that's why it's up in that range. But as I said, we'll talk about more about that tomorrow. Cancer and heart disease, so we say, are the two leading deaths in Canada. They were responsible for just over half of the deaths in 2008. And we know that this number is increasing every year. And most of you recognize this man, right? Terry Fox. So again, 29.6% of all deaths is due to cancer. And so it's an issue. It's something everyone is concerned about. It's constantly being on the front page and being researched. We know it's on the rise, and you can see it. So what's causing it to be on the rise? Well, there's different carcinogens in our diet, in our lifestyles, in our environment, and the number one is smoking. And again, you know, here's all the different top cancers that they list to do with smoking carcinogens. Oops, sorry. But again, my point is, it doesn't matter to me which part of the body it's going to attack. Cancer is cancer. And so, as long as it causes cancer, we want to do what it takes to avoid that, right? If we can in our lives. Alcohol is another huge factor. And of course, to this group today, this is not a big deal for me to have to go into this a lot with you. But it is interesting facts and numbers that you can share with friends and people you know who are caught up into these, you know, these addictions, unfortunately. So again, we don't tend to think of coffee and cancer, though. And so again, here we are, the risk of bladder cancer, and we find it's especially with men. You know, interesting enough, too, just to kind of pop this in here, is tea drinking. Black tea does not contain caffeine, but it contains a poison called tannin. And tannin is very harsh on the body as well. But men particularly suffer from drinking black tea. It'll pull the iron out of their body. And it's unusual for a man to be iron deficient. But if I see a man who is struggling with iron, getting their levels up, the first thing I question them on is, do you drink black tea? And usually they do. And so it will pull the iron out of the body. So we know caffeine is a co-carcinogen. It is linked to cancers, again, you know, of the body. But most common, the breast and prostate is probably the target areas. Theobromine, as I mentioned, is also in chocolate, besides the caffeine. And so then again, chocolate, 1 ounce, has 44 milligrams of theobromine. You can see the syrup, but here we're talking about the chocolate flavor mix in whole milk. So the powdered hot chocolate mix. Look at the number difference, hey? So it's huge that we don't realize. And meat eating, we know, because of the transit time, especially in the colon, when we consume meat, is very slow and takes a long process. This will increase our risk substantially with digestion cancers, and especially, again, with bowel cancers, colon cancer type thing. And so our risk goes up again according to how much meat we eat, of course, makes a difference too. So here you can take a look at the colon cancer, particularly their increased risk of colon cancer. So if you were to eat it less than once per month, they have found that actually to not make an impact, hardly at all here. But once a month to once per week. So as soon as you go over that once per month, it jumps to 39%. 2 to 4 times per week, 50 chance increase, sorry. 5 to 6 times, 84, and daily or more. It's just way over, isn't it? So we know that, yes, it plays a big role. And now, more than just that, with the colon, this is specifically colon cancer, but you know, there's other issues with the actual meat. So the red meat being within the blood and so forth. Actually, it is. I don't know, this study was done with these particularly, but chicken does play a role here too. And it's interesting, especially with cancer, because chickens tend to be natural leukemia cell carriers. That's just natural to their body. And if you have a low enough immune system, you could pick that up. And they do say it can be transferred to the eggs as well, but you have to have a very low immune system to grab that. But chickens tend to have cancer, a lot of cancer tumors. And they'll just pluck those tumors out. So if you have 5 or less tumors, they'll pluck them out and sell them. If they have more than 5, they'll still pluck those out or take that portion and sell it as a thrifty chicken. I might have to end now.